Welcome, everybody. I think we have. Are you recording now? Okay. Welcome to the Department of Workforce Services Employer Advisory Council. We need a motion to open the meeting. So let's go straight into what Kevin's in a hurry. That's what I'm told.
Let's open the meeting. Let's go.
Let's open the meeting up. So Eileen, we are open.
We're open
for business. All right, let's go. So, well, let's hold off and approve the minutes after Kevin's done. That way you can get your stuff taken care of. And without further ado, let me, Kevin Burks. Melissa, can you get Kevin's presentation popped up? And make sure you talk loud. We are not on a recorder. We are doing this on Google. And then the microphone is over there. So if you're going to talk loud over there. Okay.
You want me to get over there?
No, I need to do it. Well, oh, yeah, you need to click. Don't break it.
I think you broke.
Good afternoon, everybody. Justin asked me to come and do a legislative overview. So my name is Kevin Bird. I'm a deputy director with the Department of Workforce Services. Know many of you. I support unemployment insurance, our eligibility service division, our field division, and then I do the budget affairs Dave all the time. And he's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm overall like just looking up the affairs.
What are you doing here?
So hopefully some of this stuff is of interest to you. It's not exclusive to unemployment insurance or anything. So hopefully it's just, I just try to pick things that I thought might interest the committee. And it's not, sorry, I have to listen anyway. I got the clicker. So I want to talk a little bit about some legislative changes that DWS was responsible for in 2023. One of them was an intergenerational poverty solution. And so what that does is allows an individual who has experienced intergenerational poverty, if they open up a My529, which is an educational savings plan, and they deposit money into it, then we actually will provide them a match and double up to $300 of the money they provide. And that was deployed by the Department of Workforce Services January 1st. We also, the adoption tax credit was passed. And so what this does is it allows an individual who does adopt to receive a refundable tax credit, which means they can actually get cash, which the tax commission got very concerned about because that can lead to fraud where people are reporting adoptions when they're not truly adopting. And so they needed an eligibility component. And so they came to us and they said, hey, what if you guys did the eligibility component, meaning we verify that an adoption actually occurred. And then we also verify that they have not received other public assistance during the year, the tax. And if that's the case, then we give them a certification and say, yep, this all lines up. And then when they do their taxes, they're able to report and if they meet the certain income guidelines, they can get a non-refundable or tax credit. So kind of cool. Medicaid dental waiver. Dental coverage is not provided in all Medicaid for adults. That was expanded. The expanded family planning services for Medicaid in the last session, which is a great benefit for individuals, has proven to be incredibly important to keep their well-being limited. It's pretty expensive because that's a great federal back rate. So we were able to get that one approved. Children's health coverage amendments. This is actually pretty unique as well. For those of you familiar with Medicaid, Medicaid is a federal-state partnership, and meaning that we have to follow the federal regulations, and then we can apply some of our own rules, some of our own waivers. But it does not cover any individual that is undocumented in Utah. The unfortunate part of that is they still need the medical services. So in the end, they go toward the charity care. And that increases everyone else's rate. And so we were able to, well, not we, a legislator was able to get the Children's Health Coverage Amendment to create a CHIP plan for undocumented children with a cap enrollment of about 2,000 for the first time. And so we opened that up to everyone else for the first time. And then first-time homebuyer,
This is a program to kind of help those who are first time trying to buy a home, to help with their down payment. They can apply for this program to see a one-time payment that can go towards their first payment to help kind of get their mortgage a little bit more affordable. Although it's certainly just one component of many components to try and address how important they certainly do.
Kevin,
yeah,
actually administering that program.
Or we're not.
It's the Housing Corporation.
The Housing Corporation is the one that does it. And so the money, though, flows through us, and we contract with the family, and then they report
outcomes. So they're the ones that are doing all the eligibility.
Right. Yep. Yeah, Utah Housing Corporation is a great partnership that we have there. Why do you do programs with us? But in order to get the money, it's got to flow through state.
Do you have any idea?
I don't have it with me, but there's still money available. So it is not exhausted. But it was hundreds of people, and then hundreds in the waiting queue. It did not get the same funding. They did ask for it again this legislative session. They did not get it. But this is 2023, and I think anyone that participated in the legislative process, 2023, the legislature was pretty generous. 2024, a lot of speech. So I'll talk a little bit about, we went in with some pretty big paths for our homeless services and our housing services. We really had to kind of change our strategy. We weren't going to get what we were asking for. And so we need to change what funds. So, bills that passed. Who's online? Are there legislators stuff online?
Right now we have William Stark, Brian Meekham, and Brian Summers, and Steve Van Valkenburg.
Bills on, and I can say whatever I want. So I have these in secret code. Green is a bill that I think is a good bill. You'll see later there's a red highlight and a yellow highlight. Red is I don't think that we would support unless we pass yellow one. I'm just not sure. One thing that I would say, and I do agree with the governor when he says this, I would not judge the legislature on bills that are written. I would judge the legislature on bills that are passed. Keep in mind that any legislator can present any legislation. It does not mean that all legislators agree with that. Anyone can present whatever it is they want. And so these are some good ones for us. HB 100 does have a little bit to do with, or quite a bit to do with, unemployment insurance. That's a special administrative expense account. For those, familiar with this, if an individual is, that's made up of penalties and interest collected with the administration of unemployment insurance. Meaning if a person commits fraud, we charge a penalty for that. If employers are paying their taxes late, we charge a penalty for that. That all gets deposited in this fund. Every single year our appropriations committee is evaluated for repurposing. We have used those exclusively for reemployment efforts, and it's always come up as a reduction. Luckily, every single year they've removed it from purposes. And 2 years ago, the chair said, well, it sounds like we need a bill to just remove this as strictly. And so we did get it last year, but it didn't pass, and then we got it again this year, and it did pass. So what that means is it doesn't change what we use the funding for, but it's no longer, we don't have to every single year ask permission. And so we hope that by flipping it from a restricted account to a special account, we'll be able to continue to use it as is, because now legislatively, all legislators have said, we support you continuing to use the program.
Keeps others stick the fingers out of it.
You got it. Yep. HB 501, a great program for Medicaid when it comes to individuals who are carceral. One of the things that you are trying to do with Medicaid and other services, if an individual is released from incarceration, you do not want them to go back. One of the ways to do that is try to stabilize their medical needs long before they are released. so that they, when they're doing other things related to their relief, potentially finding employment, they don't have to worry about their medical coverage. Many are getting the medical care while they're incarcerated, and it falls off once they're released. And so we submitted a waiver as a state to enroll an individual 30 days before they are released from the market. While that waiver was being considered by the Fed, California got a more broad waiver that allowed them to do it more than 30 days. And what this bill does is says, oh, well, let's revisit that, and now let's look at 90 days before they're released. So essentially, a person who's incarcerated and knows they're going to be released within 90 days, if this waiver is approved, we would actually get them on Medicaid within that 90 days of release. And then when they are released, they are already enrolled in Medicaid. Try to improve their lives so they don't. So we certainly like that. We think that's a great one. HB 572 is the, for those unfamiliar, Steve Waldrop was a former representative. He is now the senior advisor to the governor on housing initiatives. I don't have his official title. It's a pretty lengthy title that he's got. But he's really good to work with. He works, coordinates with us a lot because we're in the health division. Again, as the original governor's budget had a lot of housing needs, his goal was 35,000 starter homes by 20. As the session proceeded, we realized we were not going to get funds. Revenue projections were lower than expected, so they were going to cut rather than increase spending. And so an idea that Steve Waldrop had that he pushed through was the tax commission has a significant fund, $30 billion, that they invest in a lot of different things. And what this does is it takes the interest collected from that, $300 million, and puts it towards first-time homebuyer starter home development, meaning that the developer now can apply for low interest loan to build parameters for starter homes, incentivize people instead of building big homes to build smaller, more affordable homes, and then they can get a low interest loan using $300 million. They'll pay it back, and what we hope is successful. Then that becomes a revenue stream now for continued development. There's a lot of ways to address housing affordability. Certainly one of them is inventory. In more homes. We don't need more 4,000 square foot homes. We need more smaller homes. So that was the goal of 570. Pretty cool. We did get that. So we do have the $300 million. So we're going to kind of roll through that and figure that one out. SB 168. The Commission on Housing Affordability talked about modular home construction. One of the issues is each city and county has kind of their own rules of how you can develop and what you can do. And some of that makes it really difficult to develop in some places. And so they're trying to balance, well, when is it the state should set the rules? So this is one where they look on the order. And then HCR 9. Which is concurrent resolution, House concurrent resolution for our refugees. The Refugee Service Office is in DWS. We love our refugees. We love how much they contribute to the diversity of Utah and the work of Utah. And so we were great, to support and celebrate Utah's welcome. It's not a bill. It's just a resolution today. Hey, we're supportive. So that was great to see that they offered that support. Because I think sometimes immigration is that mix, and they're not. Okay. Questions about those? Okay. No text yet, so I'll go to my reps. The legislative session had a ton about data. And that gets tricky for the Department of Work. Because we have a lot of, we run a lot of, and we tend to use that data across all the programs, simplify it for the people who are trying to access it. And so HB 349 was the most extreme of those, where it said you cannot use any data submitted for a specific specific reason for anything other than that specific reason for which. And what that means is if a person reported, if we found wages reported to unemployment insurance, and we could use that for fraud detection SNAP, we couldn't do that because the wages were submitted for unemployment insurance, not for SNAP. And so no one would be submitting wages with the understanding, oh yeah, go ahead and use it for fraud. But it is the correct thing to do when you're administering the integrity of all the program. And so we actually had quite a bit of discussions there. Luckily the bill did not move forward because again, not the right move. We certainly want to educate people as they submit information, but simplicity, we could certainly have been able to simplify the program by using the data across all of them so that people have to turn the same information over and over and over again every time they reach out to the customer. We're glad that one. HB 463 was a bill that did get quite a bit of progress, but stall, I don't think that it's going to go away necessarily next session. I think it will come. Potentially what the House said is, hey, we have certain triggers, and if we're overspending on Medicaid, it immediately triggers these actions. First action, even though it's probably the lowest cost, is you cannot hire state employees without giving them. And then you eventually get down to the benefit. But it was very punitive towards state employees, the way that it was written. And I think most people are concerned about how much Medicaid is costing the state as a whole, and that there should be some triggers that do lead to certain actions, but I think everyone, thankfully got the agreement that this wasn't thought out enough. But I do think that is something that is coming down our road. It does not affect unemployment staff, but it certainly affects quite a few staff in the Department of Workforce as well.
Thank you, set a precedent. Do these legislatures have any idea?
You can stop. Just kidding. Just kidding. That was dangerous.
Please, guys.
Do they have any idea how much knowledge and training it takes to implement these programs?
Well, it depends on the legislature.
Yeah.
I think there are some committees that have been tasked with overseeing very specific programs. I think they have a better understanding of how much it takes. So, as an example, they brought up that I testified in Health and Services. Yesterday, and they do have a better understanding. But there are hundreds of legislators.
Yeah.
And so they take it more of a financial way. Medicaid is now X percent of our budget, and it used to be this percentage of our budget. We need to get this under control. Here's the way.
You can get people that are going to burn out, they won't stay. And it costs too much money to constantly be trained. And Medicaid is such a huge program. And the knowledge you have to be efficient with it is immense.
Well, and I think the issue that we had with it most is the way that it was written, it was cutting the costs that are an insignificant cost of the program. You're looking at the administration of Medicaid, it is a very small portion of total cost, true cost or coverage.
Yeah.
And it was more, well, we know this isn't going to save money, but we're going to do it. And so it was just kind of, it was an interesting debate. And then we tried as state agencies to not speak in opposition, especially if it's across multiple agencies, work at the governor's office. So it's not 20 agencies going through it. A field sponsor. But if it is a specific to DWS, then I'm the one that will go and kind of talk to the sponsor to realize the benefit. Trying to get it. It just depends if they want to. I have found, for the most part, in spite of what Dave says, disparagingly, on record, most
have an idea, and you need to figure out, well, what is it you want? And then they're willing, if you can get them to where they want, they're pretty flexible on the, it can't simply be, well, that's a bad idea. Kind of got it. Okay, well, what are you trying to do? You understand this. And like, okay, well, that makes sense, but I still want to do this. Well, what if we did it? I think if you can work with them on how to get to what they're looking to do, usually you can navigate it pretty well. And we'll talk a little bit about that.
How long can you live?
How long can I live?
Yes, so that you can maneuver and negotiate this.
Yes. Well, probably I got two more steps. And then the last one was SB 274. That actually is a pretty impactful to unemployment insurance as well as many of our divisions. There was a senator who is an attorney that was concerned about having administrative law judges that make decisions on programs that are administered by the same agency in which they reside have a problem. And so that we have our administrative law judges in DWS, and they're making decisions on decisions made by DWS, that doesn't make sense. And so the original bill was to move all administrative law judge functions under the attorney. And so then it quickly flipped and said, oh, let's just do a study. And then the governor actually vetoed this. He didn't veto it because of concept, although I think that we agree that that's not the right strategy. He said, I veto it because why do you need a law for us to submit data? Just ask us for data. And he's trying to reduce the amount of laws that are passed. Right? That's a great letter if you have a chance to read the veto letter from the governor. He does a really good job of maneuvering of, hey, this is my overall principles that I'd like. You know, one of them is we're passing too many laws, depending on. And so can we figure out a way to pass less? This was great. So this one's not gone away. And so we will be submitting the data that we do. For those of you that work in unemployment insurance, I think you can easily say, well, appeals doesn't feel, they don't have to listen to us. They'll rule how they want to rule, or they are completely independent. But the concept, you can see visually how it can be concerned. And I think his thought was, well, maybe it's okay if DWS, but it's really fair or fair. And I think that's what he's trying. Questions about those? Hopefully they're interesting. Here's yellow ones, and these all pass. They're interesting. And I don't know exactly where to go with them. I'm interested to see where employers go with them, where we as state agency hiring individuals go with them. They were all kind of paired together. They're not unique necessarily to UTOP. I think there is a group that's going around getting a lot of states to pass the same connected legislation. But you can see one is workplace discrimination amendments. It prohibits an employer from compelling an employee to communicate or otherwise act in a manner that the employee believes would burden or offend the employee's sincerely held religious beliefs. That's private. HB 460 requires a government entity to grant an employee's requested period of leave for performing certain tasks if the task would conflict with the employee's sincerely held religious beliefs or conscience. That's one we have the unknown about. What does that mean? That it's against my conscience. And what is the task? Hardship is difficult for those of you who are employers, that you can experience this with, as an example, ADA accommodation. You have to accommodate unless there's a hardship. It's difficult to say there is a hardship to the point of denying an ADA request. This similarly can say, well, I don't want to do this task because it's against my conscience. We as an employer would have to prove the hardship, deny that request. So it gets a little bit tricky. We're going to have to see. So it's in law. It's a matter of what employees now elevate as tasks they want to be removed from. So we don't know what employees are going to do.
And then the last one is exercise of religion, similar to HB 396, but for questions about that?
We did a little bit of work on 96, but I got this up. Interesting ideas about how broad it was drafted, brought it back more consistent with the 20s philosophy.
Yeah. And I believe it was like an educator error pushing a lot. One of them actually failed. Well, didn't fail. They made a motion to move on. And that's usually an indication of, hey, we're just not. But then the very next day was the first item. So clearly someone was like, no, this is one that we wanted. And so I think there was good discussion about it. And again, it's more about application. How does it apply to where we're, are we going to be defended in decisions? We, of course, trying to find that balance of allowing employees to exercise their conscience. But still, you and that definitely impressed me. Question back?
I thought the guys that were on the firing squad going back out of that because of the skills of conscience. Yeah. About this bill.
Well, this was the example they brought up was a person that made signs, and they were asked to make a sign displaying something that they were at full disagreement with. And they said, well, I don't want to do that sign. But sorry, this is your job. And then they quit. And that's where that came out. Because why can't you just give them another sign and not work on that sign? And so you can just see it has a lot of ways to go. It really depends on the escalation of the report. What happens? But certainly private employers that rely, get by religion to work on that subject. And then that gets a little bit tricky. Well, but, they're a little complicated. And so it's again trying to strike that balance. But it's certainly swinging with those three more. As we have covered. Okay. The unemployment insurance one, this is one that came up last session and then was approved, did not pass, and then did pass this. So HB 170 is the unemployment insurance amendments, and it identifies specific conduct that if a job seeker does, prevents them from getting unemployment insurance. Specifically that they didn't appear to schedule interviews or that they don't accept a job offer suitable employment. We did quite a bit of work with the sponsor to try and walk them through that we already do this. The reason why I put the current law on there is it says the division finds that the claimant has failed without good cause to properly apply for availability. We tried to explain that not showing up for job interviews is not properly applying for suitable work, not a need to specifically distinguish this specific behavior. But get a lot of constituents during the pandemic that elevated that they were not showing up for it because unemployment insurance was so rich and great that they didn't want to lose their unemployment, so they were just applying to check the box. And so in the end, I think we tried to get it to a spot where we think it's doable. We don't think it makes major changes to unemployment insurance because we already applied the law that way. But these are the ones you kind of have to figure out, okay, are we resolving the issue, the concern without significantly creating issues for the department? And then the other thing is we have to develop a website where employers read about the law and understand what it is they should report, how it is they report it, when those kind of questions.
That should be noted. We already have that functionality. Just wanted a little more clarification of it. So yeah, we've always been able to accept reporting this year.
I think he just, I think he felt it was, and we tried to scare him that way. It was, oh, you can already do this. Like, well, how do employers know about it? So, and again, that's okay. If in the end it's like, well, do a better website. Okay. And we can do this. Again, I was very grateful for what we were able to work with him on. We got to the point where we think it's okay. We don't necessarily think it was necessary. But it's some of his perception. There is a perception out there. And now it's the one to walk. I think, also the concerns that people have about unemployment aren't truly correct. Incorrect.
This is Bill. I had a question on that one. The suitable work provision, that'll still be part of the new law, won't it? Otherwise, I think it seems to me it'd be in conflict with the federal law.
Can you repeat that, Bill?
Can you repeat that?
Yeah, I'm kind of in a remote area, but the suitable work provision, it comes from federal law, so to take suitable, like to accept an offer of employment. Well, if it's not suitable employment, and we deny benefits, it seems to be in conflict with federal law.
Well, yeah. So what Bill asked was he wondered if this is if changes in HB 170 were in conflict of federal mandatory statute. And Bill, to answer the question, we did run this through our regional Department of Labor representation to make sure it was still conforming to existing federal law. And they had given it a pass. They said as long as we weren't trying to redesign or redefine, the suitable work requirement, then we were fine. So we did run it by them though to make sure. And so that's what Kevin was kind of getting to is, we were able to mitigate any kind of drastic changes to make sure it's still aligning with federal and state law.
Okay, so you still will be, defining what suitable work is then.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. He didn't really say, he just wanted to add in there. His main beef was the, when people didn't come back, he wanted to put a date of how many days they had to actually reject it. But it was funny because we usually use two, but he added three. So, thanks for that.
Yeah, okay. I think, to Bill's point, that bullet, I think the law says, Baylor is a proper suitable. So I think it's within the law.
Yeah, he didn't try to change the suitable.
That is my text, Bill, but just, this is my last slide. So here's some, appropriations to the Department of Workforce Services was able to get, homeless services, we had a pretty big, the issue with homeless services right now is we tend to, during the winter months, we have what are called blue light days, where it's too cold for them to reside outside. And so we are required to expand availability of beds. And then as the winter subsides, shrink those beds down immediately. And then all the individuals who are residing in those beds now are back out. So it's kind of up and down. You never really have accepted involving total truth, we only address it when it's winter. And so the governor's proposal was, hey, here is a comprehensive plan for Utah to do this, not only for winter months, but every month included wraparound service, but not just shelter, but actually try helping people as well. It's not providing, letting people be on the street is not really helping them at all. So I think that everyone's kind of agreeing with that. Not everyone agreed. And so, and unfortunately, we weren't able to get what we asked for, but we did get certainly some funds. And some of those are a low barrier shelter, something quickly standable outside of the blue light to be able to cover more people. And then kind of ongoing supports for underfunded programs. City Mitigation Fund is it goes out to cities that do have shelters and have ramifications of having shelters within their community. So this reimburses and tries to help them, for allowing shelters. law enforcement home, first-time home buyer got $3 million, so it's similar to the first-time home buyer that we just discussed. Law enforcement, and then SNAP Summary BT. Some of you have seen that on the news lately. This is a one-time benefit for individuals with children who are eligible for free lunch for the summer. So they get this free and reduced lunch during the school year, and then they have 3 months off, and that supplemental lunch is gone. And so this, what it does is individuals are eligible for that. They can use EBT card for $120 for the 3 months of summer for eligible. We asked for it for ongoing. It was not approved. Again, kind of snippy this year. So we had to go back, and we didn't get it the first executive appropriations. It meet twice, and we were able to get it at one time. Or not this summer, next summer. And then we're going to pursue it as one-time funding again next session or ongoing, depending on how revenue deficit or 206,000 children get it. For example, $26 million in federal funds. Then SNAP benefits 100% federally funded. We just couldn't get it across the finish line of ongoing revenue. Okay, I'm going to go.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yep.
Just like that, that's gone. All right, why don't we go ahead and move on to the approving of the minutes while we'll bring up the trust fund or power fund we have. Can I get anyone who would like to make a motion to approve the minutes from the December 2023?
Motion to approve the minutes.
We have a motion. Go ahead, sir. 30 seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Cheryl, the online vote.
Aye. Aye.
Started. Okay.
Aye.
Your minutes are approved. All right, thanks, everyone. We have it here to discuss council vacancies, but I'm not sure we didn't really talk about this. And I was talking to Dave a little bit before me. There was a change to some of the councils and committees that was made during the legislative session, actually dropped the number of our employment advisory council. And so we did have some vacancies until the legislative session. And now, as of the governor signing the bill, we no longer have any vacancies. They dropped the minimum for all representation to 3 for each. And of course, the council is represented by labor, by employers, and also by public. And so we have enough numbers for all those. So we'll probably stick that up again. Plus, what do you guys believe? But we're bringing a delicious lunch every time, so you don't want to leave without. Okay, real quick, why don't we talk, get it bumped up. Okay, thank you. Let's talk about why everyone's here. Talk about the strength of the unemployment insurance trust fund and the program, and then we can open up the questions afterwards. I do have to follow up from the last meeting. Questions that are fine. This is the, our mega graph that we normally will roll out to everybody, and this our historical numbers for what the trust fund was at, where it's at, the balance, the minimum and maximum adequate range. Of course, it's statutorily required, but we try to aim always to get into a minimum and maximum range of unemployment insurance for the unemployment insurance trust fund. Again, remember, unemployment is insuring covered wages for the state of Utah. And I actually have a handout I'll hand out to everybody, and then I can we have a shared as well. I'll just make sure Sarah was raising her hand there, make sure I was talking about. And so the minimum national range, and we have our rate here, of course, covered this last in the December meeting of 2024, tax rate right now, our reserve factor at 1.1 and our total cost at 1.003, right? And so that is 0.3% what we're looking at. So that is a very, very small number. Our contributions for the year actually look pretty good, and these are all actually updated. Wanted to look at the most recent number we have for our trust fund now, $1.16 billion. Now, there has been some question about, wow, that's a lot of money. $1 billion is a lot of money. And 10 years ago, we would have said that's a really a lot of money. But we insure up over $100 billion of wages in Utah. So basically 1% of the money that we insure covered in our trust fund. So that actually is, in our mind, an acceptable number for the trust fund model. I'd like to see a little higher, actually. The minimum and maximum should be a little bit higher. right now, if you look at our 2024 number, it's $1.3, $1.7. So we are falling short a little bit on that one. We go and look at our trust fund balance projection. Right now, we're looking at 2024. We normally will look at our numbers as of June 30th, 2020, of the year, and that's because that's when the tax rate run starts to begin, and that's when our calculation starts. But tentatively speaking, we're going to look at our cube number. Right now, we are looking at our trust fund balance, which is the red dotted line, is still falling short of our minimum and maximum adequate. You'll see that this number kind of expands and contracts. I believe it's expanded in because the economy is getting better. You guys haven't noticed, Utah is a hot, hot economy. It's actually one of the more desirable places. We've had a lot of in-state migration from other states to help curb that along. And of course, you can see the unemployment rate is very low. And our breakout on the agenda, we're sitting at about 2.2%. So we are still, in the old days, the economists would say 5% of what we wanted for maintained unemployment. We're at 2.8, which means we're running good and hot. Nowadays, it's debatable on whether you want to be 3% or 5%. You know, it's a personal preference. But 2.8 is good. National average, I believe, is at 2.5. But, oh, sorry, that was last week. But I think national average is at 3.1. I have it on here, but we are still under the average. When we're looking at our contributions of benefits paid and benefits, benefits collected or contributions collected, Mike likes to affectionately call it not a contribution, it's tax, that's what everyone wants to say. Dave will tell you it's tax, it's not a contribution, right, Dave? So we're looking at, right now we're looking at our 2024. Right now we are in good condition, we're in good condition right now. We're collecting more than we're paying now. And that's always good. That's the goal. That's a sign. Generally, people will use this as a sign of state of the economy. I will remain neutral on the particular argument that helps them want to come talk to me about it personally. But we are in a good state right now. We are projecting, now these numbers we do get from GOPV. And so the projection that we are looking at is that we will probably see a slowing of the collections, efforts and also a slight increase. The debate is whether because the economy is getting soft or not, that I don't know. Could also be the inflationary increase of what benefits are looking like because of your wages increase. As wages inflate, our demand for insuring those wages actually goes up, so our maximum benefit amount actually well. And so, we don't have that on the breakdown, but I believe this year is 7.45. So 7.6, you've actually seen it kind of go up. And so I remember 20 years ago when I started, it was like $365. So I'll get that. We're looking at our distribution. I know this is a big question that we always get. We thought we had that in here with the minimum. Utah employers paying a minimum rate this year. 78% of all the employers that are paying unemployment contribution are paying the least amount possible. That's actually a good sign that we have a good tax program. It's also just got to employees and a good strong economy. Again, we are an exchange rated system. The more you use the program, the higher the benefit or the higher the contribution to collect for cost per week. So when we have 70% of the people paying the minimum, or the employer paying the minimum, that's good. And there were some questions about how it compare. And I didn't get a chance to actually highlight this, so I apologize for the wonkiness of this. Utah, scroll down. We are actually in a religious position as well. We keep looking at this. This is actually alphabetical order when the feds come out. This is our tax number. This is our throwback up. I believe the first number is the percent of taxable wages and the percent of total wages from our tax report that comes out of the January 0.59. So when you look at all the other states, and these are all actually, these you said, well, there's a public documents as well, so, you know, here. You look up and down, there are some states with better rates than Utah, but there are also a whole bunch of states that have a higher tax rate. So when you're looking at Utah, we are actually a really good state when it comes to our tax. We're not really indeed, although I think that's too much for some people. But we'll never get them to abide by it, but it looks good. How strong is our trust fund? This is an interesting one, and I think what's interesting is that the pandemic tended to put pressure, what it did was put pressure on every state to tweak into most of their trust funds. Utah sits right here at it's 1.18. I believe the number can be 1.14 now. We can actually do an estimate on our own numbers. We use an average high cost multiple. What that means is that the one means for every year. So what this basically will tell you is that we can pay average benefit amount over 1.14 years, $0 in contribution. Now that doesn't really happen, but it's an estimate number that they're going to look at to see how strong the trust fund. You notice right now, Utah is right about here, right in the middle. Now some states like Wyoming and Alaska and Oregon, they generally will overburden their employers. Now, they have a very, very strong, very, very robust trust fund. But that is not necessarily always so helpful because you really need 2 years of unpaid contribution benefits paid out for a state like Wyoming. But Wyoming wants it that way. Oregon wants it that way. But that means you're collecting money that you never really intend to actually use for protection. Remember, unemployment contributions that are paid by the employer, go 100% of those benefits are going back into the economy as benefits paid out, transitioning to their new job. And so I think, generally speaking, anywhere from 1 to 1.5 years really kind of the optimal level. I know Utah's code is built to where our minimum and maximum numbers are generally about 1.5 years. That's usually where credit payments to just naturally. And so the fact that we're over 1 year, good sign that the federal government does recommend 1 year of an AGM in order to be there to robust or a strong One thing that was interesting though is that even 4 or 5 years after the pandemic, 4 years after the pandemic, many states are still underneath that amount. If you look at our little friend, our friend over in California, I think they're 0-0. Don't have any money. They're broke. They're actually still paying back money, I believe. They have from their pandemic borrowing, there's 5 or 6 states. I don't know about California, I remember one. Virgin Islands is always one, but they've been paying back money since like then. So they're all, you kind of take what you want away from this graph, but there's no funding that states in other moments because it's really kind of how you manage. They're older managers, not like when you kind of advise here. Utah, what a question.
I would agree.
Yeah. Melissa, why don't you pull up? And so I wanted to touch on any questions on the graphs or anything the other one talked about. Right now we're in good shape. I was stressing the fact that we were getting late. We weren't able to catch up to the minimum and maximum adequate range, the sweet spot. I was getting a little nervous, but if you notice in the graph, we are actually going to start catching up to it. So it was just a matter of the wage growth leveling out, and that eventually what kind of happened. You can't go hot forever, or else stick with people get pumped. And so this one right here, and then we'll talk about the other one's a follow up from the question you had before. So I wanted to prepare something for you guys to have available in case you ever wanted it. If you want to come up with really it's a cocktail party or stump your friends about the unemployment program. I wanted to share something for you. Just so you had it, and so this will Cheryl will send out an electronic copy for you. I do have hard copy for you in case you want to come out. But for our folks at home, you'll get an electronic copy as well. I wanted to highlight a few things. Our trust fund at $1.16 billion, and that's as of the 20th of March. High cost multiple 1.14 years, and then I have a general explanation of what the average high cost multiple is. We've covered that a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about our benefit calculation. So this is actually one of the doctors that needs to report out on how the benefit is. Not doing the bill why it doesn't work sick. A lot of it is statutorily required, so it's going through the law, you can actually pick that up. It's boring read if you want to put yourself to sleep, go for it. But right here, here's the summary for it. Total wages that is estimated that we have to insure is $102 billion. That was basically calculated off 2023. Average insured employment, $1 million, for fiscal 23. And an average fiscal wage, $62,000. That average fiscal wage is interesting. Generally speaking, from 2 years ago, and when you look at the BLS stats from, average household or average individual income, it's around $52,000. But this is a little more updated because it's, our economists come up with this number of student calculation. So we generally say the wages are increasing really good in Utah. When we look at the average fiscal wage of $60,000. Fiscal weekly wage was $1,000. And when we look at the number at 746, that's part of the required drop. Takes 60% of the average fiscal week and drops down to 746. And I have to minus 5 because there was a sunset law provision built in with social security deductions that we have incorporated from over 10 years ago for that law boarding level of jumbo. And then we have our minimum monetary that also goes quite a minute actual wage base. This part is just what's used to determine the minimum amount of money that's needed for somebody to actually qualify for. You need $5,000 earned in an 12-month base period, time period. You have to spread out over 2 quarters. You have to have that minimum amount. That would be like $100. So that would be hard. Math on the fly is not my strong point. So if you ask to quote me on that, you're not going to get spread in my stomach. But our actual wage base went up to 47. It was 44,000. So it is going up, and that's the net matching. The actual wage base is what we use to calculate how much employers pay them. So the tax rate is based off of that, and then that's what the maximum number based on what's on the net. If you want, we'll go over that later, but I don't want to bore everyone. Then I want to just highlight a couple of things here. Minimum tax rate is 0.3%. So that's a very small number. And when you multiply it by the wage base, you're looking at a per employee tax burden of $141 for 2024. And that's if that person makes $47,000. It only goes up to the $47,000 and then it caps and stops. So we will only ask for no more than $141 per employee. That's 78% of the employers are paying that low number. The average tax rate, when you look at the DOL tax report for 2023, was 0.62%. And so that's, again, a very small number. So that's the average. When you take the whole gambit of all tax being paid, the average is 0.62, or about $291 per person. That's when they averaged it out on the tax rate. We are not, again, 70% of all employers are paying only $141.
That's
a year? Yeah, it's for the year. Per person. And so what I wanted to highlight here is that the average fiscal wage of $60,000 means someone's going to be making around $596. If the average person in Utah filed for unemployment, they would most likely qualify for $596. Translates to $15,500 paid out over the benefit year. And that means for the $141 investment you're putting in for that individual, they might drop up to $15,000. Now, not advocating and saying, hey, they're transitioning to another job because either you fired them or they quit or you had to lay them off. So it's always a good thing for someone who's transitioning to another job. But that's the protection that unemployment gathers. I use this imagery when I talk about unemployment insurance. In the Colorado River, it's super wild with what it begins to dam it and use it for water irrigation or for hydroelectricity. It was really wild. In fact, a lot of people would die on the river. It's so wild and so dangerous. But it's by damming it, they smoothed it out and made it the recreational gem that we all enjoy today. Unemployment is very similar to that. Prior to an unemployment insurance program being implemented, economic recessions, economic cycles were wild. They swing really wide. And there was nothing to really help out kind of stymieing the wild swing back and forth from good economics to bad economics, kind of putting setting that shift. And that's actually what it does. And this is the sign for it. So when people, the economy goes really bad. That $50,000 per person helped them transition to the job. So I wanted to highlight that's the little kind of glance. It'll be made available to everybody, and then we'll show up with anyone who wants to. Any questions before we move on?
Have you ever run those numbers and excluded all the employers that have one employee?
I have not. We were just kind of throwing this together this week, Tyler, but that's a good idea. We can actually.
I think you ought to do that. Your numbers will change dramatically.
Keep that note on the chat. All right. So last thing I want to touch on, the last thing, you can bring this a little bit bigger for me, Chris, but there was a question asked. I can't remember who asked the question was. Can we find out what the breakdown of the NAEPS codes were for everybody who, you know, who's paying the high, who's paying the low percent of unemployment? This is a dangerous report. There was a lot of concern that was thrown my way when I said, hey, don't be sharing these numbers. And we're not sharing numbers. I do not have any numbers of, hey, who's walking away. But I did want to highlight one thing, because there was a general belief that if you go all the way down to the bottom, scroll over to the bottom, this is all the types of jobs that are paying the maximum. Landscaping service. What I wanted to highlight wasn't necessarily the numbers, because the numbers are not important. I wanted to highlight one thing is that when you look at the maximum between landscaping service, stuff in the computer, temporary health companies, people can think, that's probably the one thing high. Real estate credit service, marketing, commercial building construction, administrative management, that's on the high end. Go all the way to the top again for me, Chris Mosa. And when you look at these, who's paying the minimum? Administrative management, custom computer services, office management, new single family housing, insurance agencies, office physicians, and dentists, and things of that nature. But what I wanted to highlight, when you go through the gambit of the cash range, don't actually see a particular industry that is favored over another. And then when we're looking at NAEPS codes, there are some NAEPS codes that are very similar. And so when you think, oh, construction or the seasonal employees. No, and what I took from this when I looked at it, and I wanted to share with you guys today, was it's not about the type of job that you have that automatically gives you a good tax rate. What I take from this is it's still about the individual management of that company, not the type of job. And so when you're looking at things like, well, who's on the high end? Well, computers. Programming, those guys have all that. Yeah, if you're a terrible company to work for, you're going to have a lot of turnover. And so what I wanted to highlight was that when we did the study, it just was not something that was obviously beneficial to try to get into. So that was a follow-up to the question we had from last meeting. I hope it's helped. If you guys have any questions on that, I think very late, there might be some theories you want to talk about that as well. But really, this is no ordinary. Still good down. I think, you know, the employee representative in your republic, that's bad management, right? If you have a terrible system or a terrible company, no one wants to work for you. You're cleaning up. You're cleaning through people all the time. This is why no one ever leaves unemployment, because it's so managed, so smart.
What is the color type?
I wanted to highlight that these are similar type. Landscaping and trade, landscaping, I just wanted to highlight same kind of jobs with each one of the brackets. So if they got the same color, they're basically the same kind of, not the exact same color, but in the same range, same atmosphere. Like marketing and yellow. Like what I did, that's the marketing and management, and we're kind of, you know, the office setting. So there was, you know, there's a general belief that, oh, if I can just say that I'm one of these kind of companies, I don't see it. I don't honestly, I think it's more if you're a good supervisor, if you're a good owner of the business or the corporation, you're not going to have these problems. When you get up to the low end, you're seeing construction companies are presumed to have a lot of turnover. They're in the low end of the risk. How are you keeping people occupied and how you all right. And I believe that is all I have. Unless anyone would like to move on. Move on to the next agenda item. We have our next meeting will be in November. Remember, we're dropping this down 2 times a year. I reminded Dave that that's when we're going to have the open meetings at training. And so if he first one of the year, though, Dave. You'll get all the ones in December after that.
Really? When is the 21st?
Yeah, 21st of November. And then Cheryl will send out a save the date.
She already has.
She'll send out the invite.
She's already beat you to it.
You know, the thing is about Cheryl is that what I do is I never doubt Cheryl. And when I do, she always corrects me that I'm wrong. So I never worry about that. Do we have any questions before we go ahead and step to adjourn? Does anyone have any questions or anything you'd like to bring up? Eileen, you want to talk about how great today's program is?
Well, no, but I'd like to do it or not, or talk with management beforehand.
Yeah, but
I'm very not surprised being in the public.
Well, what
I mean, hit me up first. I'm very transparent.
That's what I would rather do.
Yeah, don't put it on my record. Okay. So if you'd like, without any questions, if we'd like to adjourn, we just need to get a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Dave, motion. Can I get a second?
Second.
And then second, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. I believe the eyes have it because most of them said you have to do it here. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the fun times.